As you all know, we don't have any advertising on this show, but occasionally we need to advertise some things, especially when it's for our boy, producer Matt, who has a thing tonight that you should know about in the great city of Toronto. Matt, what is this thing?
It is tomorrow evening in the great
tomorrow,
city of Toronto.
Sorry. See, this is why we don't do live reads in the show, because I didn't even get the goddamn day right.
Yeah, it's fun that way. Okay. We have the On the Big Ice. It's our fourth one. You know the guy who created Kevin Kennedy, where we did our live podcast. He started this TED Talks idea with baseball that's mm-hmm. taken off. There's actually one in Manhattan, I think, late January that they're doing.
They've
done eight baseball ones. They had, I think, 120 people or 160 people to the last one. And the hockey one's just taking off now. But we've had some good ones so far. Obviously, Merrick did one with Friedman and Ked Reed. That was really good. Steve Dangle was at that one. Jeremy Taggart was awesome. We did one with Chris Johnson last time where he was fantastic. As we know, we have him on here all the time. And this one's going to be great because Pierre LeBrun is the big name there.
Hey.
And you know, he's got great stories.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And I think Dave Bedini will be a cool guy there. He's going to talk about Keon and Me, which we've had him on.
Mm-hmm.
Also Zeisberger, McGran, so just a cool little setting. It's a lot like our live podcast was.
But the big get is Pierre LeBrun.
Yeah.
ESPN and TSN. Pierre LeBrun.
I'm promoting the TSN guy. That's very good of me.
Pierre is good people. So it's tomorrow night. Now, is it in that same sweatbox that we did the podcast in where it felt like we were White Castle burgers being steamed in some sort of steam device?
I wish it was. That was fun there. And plus it's winter now, so it'd be so warm and cozy down there. But no, it's at 918 Bathurst. It's an old Buddhist temple. It's a cool little setting. and there's Great Lakes beer served there, pulled pork sandwiches, mm-hmm. the whole shebang. So it's $10 a ticket. It's promo code is PuckTalks. And $10 to come sit down. And you get to have a beer with all these guys afterwards.
Where can people buy tickets?
You can buy them at ontheice.com. I'll tweet out a link later.
Awesome. Very good. So producer Matt will tweet out the link later. And obviously, those listening to the show in the Toronto area, I highly recommend you go there. It's at a Buddhist temple. You could rub Pierre's belly for luck. That's always a good thing. And it should be a good time. I can't wait to get back up there and do one of these things.
I know. I was actually thinking that, how it'd be nice to get you back up here.
I talked to those boys about a little bit about doing this stuff. So we'll do it again at some point. And for those asking about a live show in D.C., it's late in the game. I don't know if it's going to happen, but we'll probably have some kind of meetup in D.C., probably on the 30th. Before the Winter Classic. I don't know if it's going to be a live podcast or not. Unless something miraculous comes together in the next couple of days, we probably know live podcast in D.C., but it's all right. I mean, we'll have plenty of time to drink and make merry as I return to my old stomping grounds in D.C. and, God willing, go to a couple of my old watering holes around Verizon Center. It is the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. I am Greg Wyshynski. Merrick off today. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for making us hot on iTunes. That's always an exciting thing. Evidently, we're as hot as a podcast about guns, sport guns, and sport shooting. So that's scorching hot. That's bullet hot. Huge stack show today, though, ladies and gentlemen. Tracy Myers on the Blackhawks coming up at 2:15. Gene Principe on the Oilers, and then Joe Yurden, who I don't think has been on this podcast. I want to say he was on the old podcast, the Pizzo. But Joe Yurden, noted jerk, will be on to talk about the surging Buffalo Sabres. Now, speaking of the Sabres, ladies and gentlemen, the latest and greatest 2015 NHL All-Star Game vote totals have just been released. To the surprise of no one, the Latvian sensation, Zemgus Girgensons, is now up to 1,089,865 votes. The only vote getter over a million. The only vote getter to crack 600,000 so far. Thanks to the Latvian infusion of voting for the All-Star Game. And the beautiful thing about what's happening in this crazy Eastern European Vote for Rory campaign is that there is a discernible Girgensons effect for the other Buffalo Sabres in the ballot. There's no reason why Jonas Enroth should have more votes than Jonathan Quick, yet he does. There's no reason why Tyler Myers should have more votes than Nicholas Cronwall or Nicholas Yarmolson. There's no way in hell Rasmus Ritsalainen should have more votes than Alex Pietrangelo or Ryan McDonough or Kevin Shattenkirk or Ryan Suter. And yet he does. And obviously, there is absolutely no reason why Tyler Innes should have more votes than Alexander Ovechkin, Rick Nash, Henrik Zetterberg, John Tavares, Jaromir Jagr, Jamie Benn, Phil Kessel, James Neal, Claude Giroux, Anze Kopitar, Corey Perry, and Ryan Getzlaff, and Zach Parise. And yet he does. So there is discernible lift, ladies and gentlemen. The Gergensen's effect is a real thing. I don't think he's going to be able to elevate any of those guys into starting lineup roles. I think Chicago's pretty much got that on lockdown. Corey Crawford, your goalie, Duncan Keith, your defense. P.K. Subban keeping his head above water, being chased by Brent Seabrook for the second starting defenseman. And then Gergensen's Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews are your three forwards. Sid, by the way, just under 100,000 votes away from Toews for that third spot. So it looks like things are solidifying unless there's dramatic changes. But here, I don't know if we talked about the Gergensen's thing on this podcast. I want to say we did, but in case we didn't, here's my take on the Latvian infusion, the Latvian voting effort here for Gergensen's. I don't hate it on principle because I think the guy gets in anyway. I mean, every team's got to have a representative, right? And you look at what he's done this season, 17 points in 31 games. He's a plus player. I don't think he's leading the Sabres in any category, but he's been an all-around very good player for them. I don't think it's outlandish to think that he could make it this season as the Sabres representative anyway. So it's not as egregious as the vote for Rory thing, let's say, which was taking a lunch pail guy, a seventh or sixth defenseman, and then getting him into the All-Star game. But in fairness, like, if I backed the Fitzpatrick thing, and I did, then I gotta be all right with this too. And my only problem about this is that, and I don't mean to be, you know, jingoistic here, but I probably will be, it's a North American game. Games in Columbus. I mean, the majority of the people in Latvia that are voting for this gentleman will not be on site. They will not be there in the stands buying the beer and buying the $30 t-shirts and everything else. There's something to be said for having the biggest stars in North America play in this game. So the people that are spending significant amounts of money to be on site, to touch the trophies, to see the skills competition, get to see the players that they'd like to see, and not necessarily see the player chosen by the people of Latvia. So that's my beef with it. Again, I'm okay with it in principle overall, but I would rather if it wasn't a situation where, you know, 2 years from now, the good people of Luxembourg vote in some random NHLer because they want representation. But, you know, to go back to something that somebody said on Twitter before about the Gergensen's thing and whether or not it's kosher. There it is. This is Daniel Kelly. I love people who bitch that ZG is being voted in as a popularity contest, but don't see Keith over Giordano as the same thing. It is essentially all a popularity contest, right? So if the Latvian locomotive is the one getting the popular vote, albeit from outside of North America, it is what it is. It's just is what it is, right? He'll be there. It's a good story. We all want good stories, the All-Star game. And, you know, my only beef is that those Latvians that are voting for him aren't going to spend a dime on the game on site like the good people of Columbus will have to. I floated this idea the other day while watching the Rangers, speaking of the All-Star game. I don't know what they're going to do about the captains. I don't know what they're going to do about the format. I know Larry Brooks, I think, wrote a piece last week. We start the Greg Wyshynski Show. There's the intro. Wrote a piece last week about Rick Nash being potentially the captain of one of the teams there, i.e. the team that would be facing, let's say, the Ryan Johansson team. And that's a delicious setup, but the NHL does tend to shy away from overt controversy like that. It's going to be controversial enough that Nash is going to be there back in Columbus for the All-Star game as a member of the Rangers. I doubt that the NHL is going to rush to try to put him front and center as the captain of a team that will be ultimately hated by the local fans. So I don't really know what the format's going to be. I haven't poked around the NHL front office lately to see what their thoughts are about the All-Star game this year and the format of it. But I'd be really surprised if they put the spotlight on Nash like that, unless he asks for it, unless he relishes the idea of going back to Columbus as the captain of one of the teams, just to get, you know, summarily booed. I mean, there's a certain masochistic aspect to that, I think, that I don't expect Nash to have, but it's an interesting thought as we get closer to the All-Star game in Columbus. Tracy Byers coming up in a second. Question of the day. Tonight's the big debut for the Epic's NHL Road to the Winter Classic, a.k.a. Not 24/7. 10 o'clock tonight, streaming all over the place. Basically, if you have a device that has internet access and enough battery power so as it does not shut off during the streaming, you can watch the show. It's pretty much how it is. I've also heard that the media is going to get a link to the show early, which tells me that they think it's pretty good and think that there could be some pre-show hype leading into this thing. I said it the other day, man. Like, I think that there is a disparity of hype here for this one versus the 24/7 shows. I don't know if it's because of the weird matchup or what have you, but I just don't feel the vibe yet. At least here in New York for this show, or on Twitter for this show, or on other social media for this show. But maybe our next guest is feeling something different, because after all, the Chicago Blackhawks have not been a participant on the 24/7 shows before. Tracy Myers joins us from CSN Chicago. What is the deal? What is the buzz for this epic show with the Blackhawks in Chicago? Is there discernible buzz, or is it sort of meh? Maybe we'll get excited as the show goes on.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the latter, to be honest with you. I mean, I haven't had a lot of people ask me about it. You know, I mean, we see those guys out there every day, but it definitely hasn't been, you know, I kind of caught the tail end of what you were saying. I've heard in past years, you know, when it's been HBO and 24/7, there's been a lot of people talking about it, but I haven't heard a whole heck of a lot up to this point. And as a side note, I want to know how Jeff Merrick gets a day off, because I was fully expecting to talk to him too today.
Yeah, I don't know either. He just arbitrarily will say, I can't do the show today. I assume it has something to do with the 17 other gigs he has, or preparing for
it
some...
It could be, yeah. He's spending
he's
a lot
a busy
of time,
boy.
No doubt.
Yeah, but yeah. It could easily be just like, you know, he needs to study up for that Brandon Wheat Kings game this weekend that he's got to broadcast or whatever. I don't know. I've stopped trying to poke into his life and see what it is that he's doing, because undoubtedly it will make me feel sad that we weren't more important to him. If you had to put your finger on one player on the Blackhawks that maybe isn't on the Patrick Kane, Patrick Sharp, Jonathan Toews level of fame, that you think could be a breakout star for this show, who would it be?
Oh, Andrew Shaw. Yeah, I think that's the guy. I mean, he's developed this reputation for the last couple of years of, you know, he loves the spotlight, he loves the cameras on him, he loves being that goofy guy. So yeah, if I had to make a guess, it would be him. And, you know, maybe Brian Bickle to a point. You know, as quiet as Bickle is, you know, the Blackhawks do a lot of different videos throughout the year and everything with either making fun of players, or, you know, they have this one out right now where they just play the instrumental of a song and you have to guess it. He's really good at this stuff. But, you know, I mean, for as quiet as he is in front of cameras in the media, although if you get him one-on-one, he's great. You know, he's much more relaxed and everything, but those two just kind of have that personality that may not come out in front of the media all the time and in front of, you know, pregame and postgame shows, but it's definitely there. So Shaw first, and then Bickle.
Sweet. And what I know, a lot of us are anticipating that Jonathan Toews will have his usual sardonic, dry humor. What are we to expect from Patrick Kane? Now, I did not know this about Patrick Kane until Josh Cooper wrote this thing this morning on Puck Daddy about the viewing guide for the show. So Kane has a girlfriend. Do you expect that we're going to see Patrick Kane boyfriend on this 24/7 type show?
I'm going to go with no, I don't know. No, I know, I think he's had a girlfriend for a while now. Cause I don't know. I rarely ask the guys about who they're dating or anything like that. I'll be honest with you. If they have kids, I ask how the kids are, but I never ask them who they're dating or what have you. But I'm assuming this was the same girlfriend that he had when he went over the lockout, because I know he took a girl over with him on his second trip back to Switzerland. But I'm going to guess, I think a lot of these guys like to keep their private lives just that. So I'm assuming we'll just see Patrick Kane playmaker on the show more than anything.
Sweet. Now, moving on to reality, actual reality, not reality television. The Blackhawks put together here's the thing, right? Like, they put together a hell of a streak, and I think that a lot of us found it very impressive because they did it without Corey Crawford. I mean, I have to imagine they're feeling pretty good about life to have been able to put that streak together with Crawford on the shelf.
Oh, yeah, and actually a big part of that they also did without Sharp, too. It certainly speaks to the depth of this team. And you know, with Sharp, you know, obviously he is what he is. He's a tremendous goal scorer. But the Blackhawks have a lot of goal scorers. So his loss, you know, you could kind of look at that. You know, you've got Cage, you've got Kane, you've got Hossa, you've got all these other guys who can score. So you can soak that up. But when you lose your top goaltender, and Crawford's been playing very well this year, you know, when he hasn't been hurt. I keep waiting for those iffy games. He really hasn't had one, but you know, the Blackhawks have struck on something here with their goaltending. You know, not just Ronta, Scott coming up and doing what he's done, but it is pretty tremendous. You know, I mean, they knew nothing really of Darling coming in before he joined them in training camp. They knew what they had with Ronta, but for these two guys to go back and forth, and now once again talk about this is how deep this team is we are now debating who gets to stay to be Corey Crawford's backup. That is how good the goaltending situation is. So this is first of all how few quote-unquote issues the Blackhawks have, and it also says of how much depth they have is who's going to be that guy who, once Crawford comes back and is playing 10 games a month, is going to get the one or two starts a month that he doesn't. But, you know, both have played tremendously well, and it's a decision that they're going to have to make here pretty soon.
You must be so jealous of the writers in Edmonton to have everything like that to write about occasionally, and not simply just how good is the, how can this amazingly great team be even more amazingly great?
You know what, and this is just me. I am not a big fan of drama. You know, I mean, to watch it from afar is one thing. I've covered it in the past. It's, you know, everybody's different. I mean, certainly it's stuff that draws in readers. Everybody loves to read about drama, but covering it can be a giant pain in the neck. So my heart goes out to the folks up in Edmonton because they definitely got a lot of stuff to talk about, and unfortunately not much of it is good right now. Yeah.
No kidding. Wanted to ask you about two players specifically on this team for maybe those of us who haven't gotten a chance to see the Blackhawks play all that much. The first one is Christopher Stieg, 27 games played, 23 points, a plus 14, obviously a pretty happy homecoming for him, all that stuff. What's been the secret to Stieg's success this year?
Well, I think the big thing is, and he's talked about it to us before, is that he got a full summer to train the way he wanted to this past year. He had that major knee surgery, I think it was in March of 2013, and so he went into that off season. He was rehabbing more than anything, and then he came to the Blackhawks last November, and it just wasn't there right away, you know. And then the Blackhawks said, "Listen, we knew he wasn't going to be totally, completely the player he was before that injury and surgery. Not at that point, you know. They figured it was going to take him a year past that surgery to fully get healthy. And now you're seeing that. Now you're seeing a guy who I can tell the way he's skating immediately from how he looked at the end of last year to what he looks like this year. So that's been the biggest thing with him, is that he got the time to just train and didn't have to worry about a rehab, didn't have to worry about coming off an injury. And, it's been a very good start for him, no doubt.
And the other person is Brad Richards. I think we all assumed that Brad Richards would have a pretty strong regular season, and then the big question mark was going to be what exactly he'd offer in the postseason. Right now, Richards is 18 points in 31 games, a plus 9 for the season. How have you found Brad Richards to be for the Blackhawks so far?
You know what? Right around the time that he had his 1,000th game, things started to turn. You started to see the guy that certainly the Blackhawks were looking to get when they brought him in for 1 year. And you know, I think we talked before the season started. You know, nobody expected him to be a Jonathan Toews or a Sharp or anything like that. He's not that guy anymore. But they just wanted him to be consistent. We're hoping that he would kind of solidify that spot at second line center, and right now he has. I mean, you look at what Versteeg, him, and Patrick Kane did, especially on that circus trip. They were tremendous, you know. And Richard's talked about it, you know, coming in this year with everything that was on the plate, and you know, especially expecting a baby. He said, "Listen, that was first priority, was making sure everything was fine there and getting everybody acclimated and adjusted to living in Chicago and." You know, then baby born and obviously a lot of good stuff, but a lot of stuff that's going to weigh heavy on the mind compared to hockey, you know, life first and everything else second. So once you can see he's much more grounded, much more settled now, much more comfortable. And he said it in, I think it was Los Angeles, he said, "Now I feel that this is my team." And it's certainly showing now. They've had some good chemistry, those three.
That's awesome. And finally, you know, I think a lot of people are starting to zero in on Chicago as the best team in hockey. Top to bottom, well put together, we know what we get out of them, the whole thing. Is there any team in that central division you think is going to give them a series? I mean, obviously we know L.A. can. I mean, there's no secret about that.
Yeah.
But do you think either St. Louis or Nashville or Winnipeg or even Minnesota, if they ever get rolling again, could give the Blackhawks a good series in that division?
I think Nashville could. Yeah.
Really?
Just based on the couple games. Yeah. I do. Just because one, they've never just really beaten Nashville in any given year. Even if they might win the season series, the games have always been close. They've always been tight, and you know, the Blackhawks played them very well the last time they were there. That was probably one of their best games against them, you know, but once again, very close, you know, and part of it is Pecorine, because that guy is always tremendous. But Nashville has some of the scoring threats that they haven't had in the past. You know, James Neal had a hat trick on them earlier this year, so you've got that. You've got them playing a little bit more of an up-tempo style because they've got the horses, they can do it now. So I think Nashville could. St. Louis, you know, certainly they could too, but of the ones that maybe we wouldn't have thought about in the last couple of years, yeah, I would say Nashville could definitely give them a tough time.
Cool. Very good. That's interesting. I think a lot of people might have gotten their little eyes open on that one. All right. Cool. Thank you so much for joining us. You've informed us about many things. Enjoy the fake 24/7 tonight. And we will talk to you soon. Hopefully, I promise you next time that you're on, that we'll try to make sure that Merrick is here. Because I agree with you. I think he's bagged out a few times on the times that you've called in.
Well, it's always wonderful to be on the show either way. So I love talking to you guys at any time. And if I don't talk to you again, have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you so much. Right back at you, Tracy Myers. Tracy Myers, ladies and gentlemen. CSN Chicago. Now, I know the line for her was a little choppy or whatever, and inexplicably the phone was beeping at me, but you have to understand that when I do a solo show and it's just me and Matt, we know two things. One, there will be technical difficulties. Two, trying to address those technical difficulties sometimes makes things even worse. So let's not even go there. Let's just assume that we heard at least 70% of what she said. And then just move forward. Gene Principe coming up in a few. Jeremy Ballaston, the audio quality is pretty bad and the face beeps. Well, yeah, I know. It's okay. I think we're all going to get through this together if we all band together. Question of the day, biggest worry and also your biggest hope for Epix's road to the NHL Winter Classic. Andrew McCreary, my biggest worry is that Liev Schreiber won't be narrating and this road to the Winter Classic will suck. He won't be narrating. He is a 24/7 boy. I don't think they went back to the Zeppo Sutherlander, whoever the hell it was from Kiefer Sutherland's family, that tried to do a Liev Schreiber impression for the NHL's NHL Revealed shows on NBC and NHL Network. I don't think they went back to him. So hopefully it's somebody that does the job. I think we'll all miss Liev Schreiber. I mean, let's be honest here. The man knew how to narrate that series in a pretty good way. For me, it's like this. It's like I want the same cinematography that we had on HBO. The shows always looked gorgeous. And I'm hoping that the malaise and the complete meh that was the previous series on HBO was a product of the subject matter, was a product of us having a guarded Toronto team and a vanilla Red Wings team and not a whole hell of a lot happening in those weeks. There were a couple good episodes. I look back at my reviews from last year for Puck Daddy. I'm going to be reviewing the show every day for every week for the Epic series too. And the second episode last year was really good. And that might be compensating for how bad the first one was. But I don't know. I feel like with the Capitals there and, you know, clearly you have some guys that have been on the show before. And you're wondering exactly what it's going to be with the whole, like, presence of the cameras and knowing what it's like. And, you know, are they going to be playing to the cameras? Are they going to be overly cautious? I mean, I think there's some real questions about how they handle it. But also, obviously, you know, you've got all the Blackhawks players that have not done this before, for the most part. And I think there's some potential for some cool stuff to happen. We're going to miss Boudreaux, obviously. But it'll be, you know, to put it in reality television terms, it's like when those knuckleheads on The Real World graduate to The Challenge. And not only have you been on reality TV, you know what's up. Now you're on a second reality show. So now that Ovechkin knows what's up, now that Mike Green knows what's up, how do they all react to this thing? God, I'm going to miss Boudreaux and I'm going to miss the dark, brooding Gabriel Byrne that was George McPhee. Maybe there could be a shot at the end of episode one of George McPhee in the rafters, like Sting from WCW. Just looking up there and brooding. Be the best. I got some high hopes for this. I think Epix is excited about it from what I gather. But I agree with Tracy. I think this is going to be one of those slow builds. I think this is one of those shows where the immediate night one hype for it may not be there, but the more stuff that comes out about what was in the episode, I think then you're going to see the audience build pretty significantly for the rest of it. All right. Joining us now on the line, and he's got to tell me if he's ever been on the show, any of the shows that we've done before, because I honestly don't remember. But I know we haven't talked to him on this show, I don't think. He is a man who writes for NHL.com, formerly a man who wrote for NBC, and a man who is a noted jerk in all of your hearts. He is Joe Yurden, and he joins us now. Joe, have you ever been on any of the radio shows that I've done?
No, I think this is the first time. This is the maiden voyage.
It's crazy. We've known each other for many, many moons, and I don't know why that hadn't happened.
No explanation. I don't know, man. Sometimes the stars don't cross the right way.
Well, I think the thing you're trying to say, and I appreciate you being polite about it, is that Merrick is a real star effer. And trying to get you on when Merrick's here obviously is a no-go. That's why we have all the cool kids on when Merrick's not here, is because, you know.
I want to say that Jeff was, you know, throwing the block down on me on that one, but I don't know. Evidence seems to point that way now. No,
it does, doesn't it? I mean, like, how many times can we talk to Brad May on this show? Like, enough, right?
The thing with talking to Brad May, though, is you end up talking to him for about 40 minutes, and then the whole show's gone.
Well, that's actually, you're right.
They didn't talk.
I say that snarkily, but in all honesty, like, he's the best guest to have because Merrick will go, Brad, curious, do you remember the story about how you put a kitten in a box and then gave it to Dominic Hasek? And then, like, the story goes on for 3 hours, and I'm able to go make a ham sandwich and, you know, pay a couple bills, and the whole thing's great. Listen, you started out this season covering a team that we all thought was going to be shit on toast in the Buffalo Sabres. And then, lo and behold, the Buffalo Sabres are only a few points out of a playoff spot, although everybody else has, like, you know, 3 games in hand, but clearly are not tanking, as we all thought they would. Why aren't they tanking, Joe?
It's it's fascinating, honestly, to be watching it this close up, because it's for as much of a roller coaster as and disaster as last season was, this season's already provided enough loops and twirls to fit your regular, you know, roller coaster tycoon setup. I mean, I mean, you look at how things went. The preseason was like, it's like, hey, they can move a little bit. They got some lines that are working. All right, maybe they'll start off okay. And then they win three of the first 18, and you know they don't score any goals. The goaltending was doing as much as it could to try to keep them in games, and we're just left stunned by how offensively horrendous this team was, and we're just left thinking like this team cannot be this bad. And now we're at the point where they've won 10 of 13. They've won six straight at home, which they haven't done since they won the President's Trophy in 07. And we're wondering, okay, are they playing over their heads now? Like, what's the middle ground? And, I mean, everything balances out. And the fun part of watching things kind of tilt the other way now is watching Sabres fans just get anxious and start wondering, oh my God, we're gonna miss out on these once in a lifetime guys. We're not gonna get them. They're gonna watch this team, you know, suck it up and make a run at the playoffs, and everything's gonna get blown to hell. And I feel like I have to step in and go, wait a minute, there are 51 games left. Let's take it easy. Let's, you know, just say enjoy the ride while it's going now, because who knows when the floor is going to fall out and they lose, you know, they pull an Oilers run where they lose 15 to 16 and then,
right.
Then the Operation Tank, you know, rolls onward. Right now, it's everything is just kind of flipped the other way. You know, you've got a line that's playing great with Gergensen, Molson, and Ennis. I think people are starting to finally see that Tyler Ennis is a legit offensive guy, you know, and, you know, everybody loves Gergensen, especially in Latvia. And, you know, Matt Molson showing that he didn't just get that contract just to cash in and say, all right, we're all set here.
Yeah, I got
my millions. We're good.
He was one of the guys who came in the offseason, and in no way, shape, or form did you ever believe that he was there to not win. And that's important. You know, I don't want to cast aspersions on guys in that roster, but there are certain guys from the start of the season you're like, all right, they're playing out the string. He was not one of them, and I think that the results kind of speak for himself there. But here's my question about the Sabres. Is it more because you made the same kind of comparison I made when I spoke to them before the season, which is the major league comparison, the kind of like it's us against the world. We're the bad news bears that we've been assembled to lose, and now we must step up and win to disprove people. Or is it more a Ted Nolan thing where it's like, even though I know my lot in life here is to not have the best team in hockey, I'm going to coach this team. And I'm going to sit Chris Stewart's ass down if it needs to be. And I'm going to sit Cody Hodgson's ass down if it needs to be sat. What is it more? Is it more the players being defiant, or is it more Ted Nolan keeping them engaged as the head coach?
You know what? I think it's Ted. I really do. I think if this were another coach in here, you wouldn't be getting these same kind of results, because I don't know that another coach would have the guts to sit out Stewart and to deal with him being honestly pissed off for 2 or 3 days about it. You know, I don't know that another coach would have the guts to sit down Hodgson with his contract and trying to find ways to, you know, to try to motivate him and do things. And I think Ted is, you know, people get all over Ted because he doesn't appear to be a master tactician. He doesn't appear to be a strategist. He's not somebody that you're going to be throwing into the same boat as a Mike Babcock, where Babcock can, you know, he's a strategist and he's a guy who can, you know, poke you behind the scenes where he's able to pull those strings. I think Ted he's the master motivator. And I mean, we're not even 2 months from a game here where, you know, the Sabres lost. It was a loss to the Panthers, and Sabres lost bad. It was another ugly one where they only get about 15 shots on goal. And Tim Murray and Ted Nolan had a very animated discussion after the game. And Ted Nolan came into the post game press conference, and he looked like he was upset. And you could see it on his face that something had been said and something had happened. And you know, for the stretch that the team was in at that point, you know, you had to say something. I mean, you, when you're losing that many games and people are having flashbacks to the start of last season when, you know, when Ron Ralston just had no control over the team and they were just playing miserable. And you're having that flashback again, and Tim Murray's like, geez, I did not sign up for this. We're not doing this again. And, you know, when you call out a guy like Nolan on his, you know, and I don't know what was said, you know, but maybe if you're calling him out on his pride and saying, hey, listen, I don't know what you're doing wrong here, but you're doing it wrong, and you better fix it. And Ted's a proud guy, and you're not going to put him in a place where he's going to feel like, you know, he's lost control. And, you know, if he sees these guys slacking off or they're not doing something right, he's obviously shown he doesn't care. He's going to sit you down. And you know what? It's worked. Stewart's been a little bit better since he got sat down. Cody Hodgson, the last two games, has looked like a completely different player where, you know, he gets in his head and he says, listen, stop worrying about being the first guy in the forecheck. Stop worrying about blocking shots. Stop worrying about playing defense. Just go out here and try to score. Just go do your thing, the thing you're supposed to do. And he's looked like, it's looked like so far, it's great. It's two games out of 31, but he's looked a lot better. So, you know, maybe to me, it's all Nolan. To me, he's the guy that's found the buttons to push with these guys, and I think the guys love him for it.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I was, he's a prideful guy, and I never thought for a second that he was going to let this thing get out of hand, which makes, you know, again, it kind of bumps up with the tanking thing a bit much, right? It's like, you know, he started the season with prideful coach, pro professionals that have come in that aren't simply cashing a paycheck. It made you kind of wonder how they were going to pull off this thing if they were actually going to throw in the towel. But the greater question, though, is this team actually as good as the pace has been? Or, you know, obviously they've won, I think it's 6 in a row at home. They're pressing for a playoff spot. The East is by no means an insurmountable thing as far as grabbing a wild card. Can this SAC team actually pull it off? Can they stay in contention for a bit?
I think they can hang around for a little while here. There are moves that are still going to happen before the season's out. And granted, you know, their spot in the standings will determine that. But, you know, you look at the guys that are basically set up to be the guys that'll be moved before the deadline. You know, the Stewarts, the Staffords, Mazaros, if, you know, if somebody's really willing to, you know, to spend $4 million on the cap for him. You know, guys like that where they're at the end of their contract, or, you know, even one of the goalies, you know, and Roth and Neuver are both going to be free agents. So, you know, there are moves that are going to be made. There's things that are going to happen that are going to change this team up, and guys are going to come up from Rochester, and it's going to be an even younger team. But I think, you know, I think for now it's going to be just steady as it goes. I think Murray is not going to overreact to, you know, the team winning like crazy now. I don't think anybody's thinking playoffs right now. You might not want to tell Brian Gianta that, who's, you know, he's said that since, you know, preseason, that he wanted this to be a playoff team. But I think with this team, it's so far off. And I think the reality of this team is somewhere in the middle. They're not as bad as they were the first month. They're probably not as good as they are right now. I mean, you talk to any advanced stat guy and they'll very happily point out, they're like, listen, they're riding a hot wave right now. This is going to cool off. And, you know, I believe that. You can't get outshot crazily every night and expect to keep winning. You can't expect Jonas Enros to keep having a 940, you know, save percentage. If he does, he might not want to re-sign in the middle of the season. He might want to wait till summer and cash in hard when Edmonton decides to back up the Brinks truck for him. But, you know, to me, it's hard to be a hockey fan and to be a Zen thinker and to just kind of keep it cool and keep it down the middle. I think that's where this lies with the Sabres. I think they're going to cool off. I think they're going to be in that running for McDavid and for Eichel. You know, they're going to come back to earth. And it's way more fun to cover a team when they're winning. You know how that goes. You know, you don't want to be going into the room every night and just having everybody, you know, running for cover. Just like, I can't believe we're losing it. You know, nobody wants to do that. But I think with this team, the thing that's making a difference, though, is that the guys that are making a difference is everybody that they want to be the cornerstones. You know, everybody that's going to be with this team in 5 years, or that they want to be in this team in 5 years, they're the ones that are carrying the load. It's Ennis. It's Girgensen. It's Myers. Yes, they're going to keep Myers. I don't care what the trade rumors say. It's Zadorov. It's Ristolainen. It's one of the goal, you know, whether it's Enroth or Neuvirth, probably Enroth. You know, these are the guys that are carrying them ahead. and this is the kind of development they wanted to see. I don't know if they wanted to see it this year, but they're getting it now, and that's a good thing. So, for you know, for if you're Tim Murray or Ted Nolan, you're happy with what you're seeing from those guys, and you know, from everybody else, if everybody else picks up the slack along with them, cool. But if they don't, they can deal with it.
And the last thing, Joe Yordan, noted jerk, who everybody was very excited that you were on the show today, and that makes me excited. You mentioned it before. What is your take on the Latvian invasion of the All-Star game with the Vote for Gergensen's campaign?
This whole thing ticked me to no end. Like, to me, it is such... when the first email came out about it, I was like, I cannot wait to talk to him. Like, just to ask him about what he thinks of this whole thing going on like this. And the funny part in watching his reaction, and you have to, and this happens all the time with half the guys in this room because they're so young. I forget that he's a giant hulking beast of a forward player. And you ask him about it, and he's just like, man, he's like, I don't even know. He's like, I don't get it. He goes, and he says, the fans back in Riga and all over Latvia, he says, he's like, they get up at 4 a.m. to watch my games. He goes, I'm not surprised by anything they do to try to do anything for me. So he goes, you know, he says the votes, he goes, it doesn't surprise me. He goes, man, it's crazy. He's like, he cannot believe the amount of support that he's getting. But, you know, but even asking him about, you know, maybe playing with Taves and Crosby and Kane and, you know, maybe whoever else who doesn't have the mumps by the All-Star game. I mean, he can't believe it. I mean, he's like, yeah, I cannot even think about it. Don't even want to think about it right now, but he's just totally blown away by the support. I don't blame him. I mean, if I had an entire country voting for me for anything, I would be at a loss. And, you know, good for him. It's hilarious to see it happen, and it's just so fun to watch people react to it, and you know, people getting on high horses and freaking out about it, or people just enjoying the ride. To me, you just enjoy the ride. It's the All-Star game. Everybody's going to make fun of it anyway. So why not enjoy a good story while it's happening?
Amen. Joe Yordan, you're the man. Thanks for joining us, my friend, and continued success and or hopefully massive failure to the Sabres, whichever floats your boat.
Hey, whatever the best story is, I'm all for it.
All right. Take care, Joe. And with that, hey, we transition very quickly. Oh, my God. The transitions here are crazy. To Gene Principe of Sportsnet in Edmonton for the smoldering dumpster fire that is the Oilers. Gene, how are you, sir?
That's a good way to intro me, hey? I'm well, the smoldering dumpster that's full of fire has been... How should we say it? The firemen are on scene and they're attempting to put it out. And I guess that the arrival started yesterday with the change in the coach and the belief that something new, something fresh, and something good is about to happen starting tonight.
And, you know, obviously you took a photo. I saw a surveillance photo of one of the chief firemen there, Craig McTavish, on the ice with the team today. Yeah. How long do you think that this transition, this passing of the torch or baton to Todd Nelson is going to take for Mac T?
You know what? I get the feeling he wants this as fast as possible. I don't, you know, the Oilers have 2 games this week, and then they play again on Sunday at home. I mean, I would be surprised if it goes past Christmas. I just get the sense that he wants to do this like fast. Let's get this going. I'm not here for a long time, but hopefully for a good time. And then the new interim head coach can take over. And then it's up to Todd Nelson from Oklahoma City to kind of cut his teeth on the rest of this season and see what he can do for the rest of the season and maybe more, depending on how it goes.
Interesting. I saw that you were texting with Dallas the day he got fired. Were you as confused as Merrick and I were about the idea that 10 days earlier, McTavish comes out and says, yeah, I see no real reason to fire the coach. I mean, they've had too many coaches fired already. And then 10 days later, he fires the coach. I mean, was that just a byproduct of how badly they played against the Rangers in that previous game?
Well, when King Henrik's laughing at you post-game, that doesn't resonate well. I think that since his comments a couple of Fridays ago, the team had only won 1 out of 5 games. I think that the crowd was getting a little bit thinner. I also would firmly believe that maybe, you know, in that setting, he wasn't going to waver as much as maybe he was internally about the coach. And I'm sure that he probably thought that things would change. I mean, five games, that's kind, I don't know if it's enough time, but you've already seen a lot. This isn't the first five games of his tenure as the coach. So I think just the combining factors of just too many losses. And I mean, in the end, that's what he's, just too many losses. They just kept piling up and piling up, and he had to say, enough's enough.
Yeah, clearly. How do you evaluate Dallas in Edmonton? I mean, I think that in some cases, he obviously wasn't dealt the strongest hand. In some cases, yeah. I felt as though the team lacked any discernible personality, and I didn't think he handled the Yakupov thing well at all, to be honest with you. Overall, what did you think of Dallas Eakins as an NHL head coach in Edmonton?
Well, I think when you're around someone as much as you are, when you're the, you know, working for Sportsnet and around the team all the time, you sort of differentiate player in person, or in this case, coach in person. I really like Dallas as a person. I think he's quite respectful. I know he came in and, you know, changed photographs and said no donuts for the media and things like that. And for some people, that was a little bit like, well, who does this guy think he is? I think when you enter a job in the NHL, you may not have to be public about it, but I think you do have to come across confident in what you believe and what you want to do. I would think that the job was more difficult, way more difficult than he thought and could have ever envisioned it would be. You mentioned the players. I mean, the Oilers have that high-end talent, but there's some you know, gaping holes at center. They're working through some goaltending. They're attempting to strengthen their defense. So he didn't have an all-star lineup that these results came with. I don't, you know, it's always hard to tell. I guess in the end, whatever he was doing, whatever his coaching staff was doing, wasn't working. And once you run out of options, or the options that you're using just have no impact on wins, then it's time for a change. I think we'll hear more and more now that he has been let go as to how he was with X and O's and systems. And, I mean, the Oilers, I think the other thing, you know, circling back to what hurt him was that here's a team with all these scores, and they're not scoring. And so when that starts to be your issue, then that even compounds the one thing you thought you would be able to do.
Where do you think they're taking this whole thing? I mean, obviously, the expectation is that Nelson's going to be the next coach if things work out for the latter part of the season. Then the heavy lifting starts. I guess the question I'm asking is, I think McTavish in the past has protected the core. Maybe he isn't going to protect them as much anymore. I don't know. Do you think that there are still a significant amount of untouchables on this team, or do you think that maybe the Oilers might be a little more open for business come, say, time?
You know what? I think you have to the untouchable tag maybe gets written in pencil instead of written in stone. You know, I don't think you could continue to say these X amount of players are untouchable when you're sitting in 30th and you've been in this scenario way too many consecutive years. Having said that, I'm not suggesting that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is getting traded, or for that matter, despite, you know, many sort of conversations that Taylor Hall's on his way out or anything like that. But I think you're more willing to listen. And my guess is this: unless Todd Nelson comes in and absolutely, you know, in 51 games or whatever, they win 35 of them, I would guess that he might be just sort of stopgap's not fair to Todd, because he's done a great service to the Oilers in
right.
their AHL system. But I think he comes in, he helps, he is settling down this team so that they can play some good hockey. And if he has, you know, a pretty good record or whatever the case might be, then I think he probably would stick around as like an associate coach. He has had previous NHL experience with Atlanta. And then you may be able to bring somebody in who is not so much high profile, but just been around and has experience and is able to maybe help this team go in the right direction. I mean, you're right. You know, where are they going? where are you? You know, you can't just drive around aimlessly. You have to at some point know where you're going and how you're going to get there. And this is the latest step in trying to do that.
And finally, with regard to that Taylor Hall stuff, I mean, one of the accusations that was laid at his feet yesterday was the idea that he has a vision for the way he wants to play and a vision for the way he wants the team to play, that maybe there's an issue with him not being coachable. Do you ever see that with Taylor? Do you get that sense?
No, I don't. I don't get it. And I know that you have more, you know, some reputable people who are saying that or saying things like that. I mean, Taylor Hall last year under Dallas Higgins was a top 10 scorer. I mean, and I don't get the sense that he stops at the other team's blue line and doesn't hit his own end. I mean, none of these kids are Frank Selke trophy winners, but I don't think he was playing to get the coach fired. And I don't think he's tuned out those that are above him. I like Taylor. He's been the heartbeat of this club. And it's funny, he said it this morning. He said, you know, people used to get on me because I was throwing water bottles and, you know, getting into it with refs. Oh, he's too emotional. He's got to calm down. He's got to relax. So then he goes, now I do that. And now everybody says, I'm not engaged. I'm not into it. I'm not as passionate. He goes, I'm not sure what people want from me. I would suggest that Taylor Hall is a big part of this team, and that unless Craig McTavish sees something himself on the bench or continues to be around him and others and sees things where he goes, I don't like that, I think you'd have 29 teams ready to make a trade for a guy who at $6 million a year is actually, you know, considering his past couple seasons, is, I wouldn't say a bargain because $6 million is a lot of money, but he's not overpaid. Let's put it that way. If he puts up the numbers that he has the last two seasons as a top 10 scorer.
Right. Exactly. Gene Prince May, thank you so much for being on the show and educating us about the Edmonton Oilers and the aftermath of the big firing this week. Be well, sir,
no problem,
happy holidays.
Sounds good. Same to you.
Gene, the hockey info machine, as I've called him on the show right now. Really interesting stuff coming out of Russia today. Our friend James Myrtle tweeting some stuff about the KHL and the idea that teams might be folding. The rubles crashed, as you may or may not know. And Myrtle writes that multiple sources have confirmed that players on three KHL teams have been paid this season. Roughly one-third of the KHL has serious problems. Some agents say they protected their KHL's players' contracts from current devaluation, but if teams don't have the money, then what? He asks. And the three guesses for teams that might be in trouble and potentially folding this year are Atlant, Bratislava, and Riga would be the teams that he thinks are in dire trouble. Myrtle's been on this devaluation from the ruble for a while and its implications on the on the Russian dollar, or I'm sorry, on the KHL rather. The ruble's lost half its value versus the dollar this year. And so gigantic financial problems for the KHL. Maybe Bettman can bail him out. You know, when the loony tanked, he stepped up, right? Mr. Bettman, this is me, Vladimir. I have to tell you something terrible about the ruble.
I'm listening.
It has lost half of its value.
Oh, right. Steal Radulov, why don't you? Bye. Click.
Nicole, this is from, I'm sorry, it was something for a thing that we're working on Puck Daddy. Confusing emails. Peter P. writes in, my biggest hope for the Epic show is that they focus on the compelling individuals on each team rather than try and pretend this is a meaningful rivalry game. My biggest concern is the narrator is a cheap Liev Schreiber imitation. Boy, the Liev Schreiber thing has gotten a lot of people up in arms. Eric Wood writes in, Chicagoans are too busy trying to burn down Jay Cutler's house and getting Trespin fired to care about trying to find out where the hell Epix is in their program listing. Sad but true. Have you been able to find the station? Are you able to locate Epix? Now, my cable box here in New York, Epix is after HBO, after Cinemax, after Showtime, after Encore, then Epix, then Sundance, then IFC. That's the that's what I've heard. I don't search it out all that often because I don't have it. I'm going to have to find it this time. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with the show tonight. I hope it's good. I root for it. I think this project and this franchise is important to the league. It's a prestige franchise. It's a prestige show. And, you know, the bottom line for the Epix thing, I know a lot of people are bent out of shape. It's not on HBO. And I know that, you know, just like there were a bunch of people bent out of shape when it was on ESPN. I will say that from what I gathered, HBO wanted to do King Sharks more than Capitals Blackhawks. That's what I was told at the time of the deal. The great thing about Epix is you get both. You get Caps Blackhawks, then you get Sharks and Kings later in the season. And the bottom line for anybody when it comes to this cable deal and when it comes to the potential of doing more things is that you want it to be successful because you want this relationship to flourish. Epix is in many ways a blank slate. HBO has a lot of other sports to consider, a lot of other programs to consider. HBO is a giant network crammed with content. Much like when the NHL went to OLN and then Versus and now NBC Sports Network, if we watch this show and we show people that it's worth something, then they'll come back and give us more real estate, and that's all we could want. All right, that's the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to Joe Yerden. Thanks to the lovely and talented Tracy Myers. Thanks to the lovely and talented Gene Principe. Joe's lovely, too. I mean, Joe's lovely in his own way, too. Lovely and talented Joe Yerden. And that's it. Do check out Puck Daddy today, coming up the beginning of our epic year in review, the top 10 players of 2014. Also, I've been hearing whispers that Sean Leahy will be unleashing the 24/7, well, whatever, Epix drinking game for tonight. And way early this morning, if you missed it, our friend Tally Duchesne has uncorked another classic ukulele tune. This, of course, would be the Mumps song, Mumps Face, set to the tune Taylor Swift's Blank Space. Do check that out. Remember Tally? She wrote the Puck Bunny song 4 years ago, a song that many people found to be lighthearted and hilarious, whilst others maybe found it to be repulsive and outrageous, something that sparks outrage. Deeply sighing. Thanks, everybody. Merrick will be back tomorrow, and we will have audio cuts from this masterwork on Epix. And that's it. Take care. Thanks for listening. Bye.